Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their insights, their expertise, and their time so that we can all grow together. My name is Gary Lafty, your host and CEO and founder of The Authority Accelerator, where we drive profits and revenues for our tech partners by elevating them just from a mere expert level to an authority level so that the clients choose them as opposed to those being chased. On this episode, I'm extremely happy to have Edward DeCoin with us. And today we're going to be sharing information and insights on how to grow a company, what to do, how to stand out, and also the mistakes that people make and how to avoid them. So without further ado, Ed, it's great to have you here. Why don't we start by you giving us a little bit of a brief background about your history within entrepreneurship and where you are today?
Well, thank you, Gary. Appreciate the opportunity. I've been a lifelong entrepreneur. Sounds silly, but I had a legitimate company at the age of 13 doing ski tours. I started a company in my bedroom when I was 18. And, you know, it sounds cute and nice and little bedroom business, but 18 years later, we had over 1,000 employees and we're doing 20 million privately, actually closer to 24. And then we were fortunate, we were in a roll-up that we went public with four other companies on NASDAQ. Took that company, stock appreciated, and we ended up selling that company. And then I've always maintained my entrepreneurial roots. You want to have a little bit of money, start with a lot of money and start a NASCAR race team. That was interesting. I helped start a bank, was involved in motorsports for quite a while. Had a chance to named de facto chief operating officer of a tech startup in the Silicon Valley, which was a whole new world, a whole new culture, but very interesting to learn from. And then about 12 years ago, really decided to get back to my entrepreneurial roots and started a marketing consulting firm, which is named Orbical. And since then, we've morphed the organization. It's now named Orbical Technology Solutions. And we really do mainly software development for process automation in the marketing and operations space.
Got you. So we'll get on to that a little bit further down the line today. But what I want to do is just dial a little bit back. You know, you started off at a very, very young age. And, you know, most kids of 12, 13 have got a bucket and a sponge and they're going out there washing cars, you know, but you had a fully formed company. What kind of lessons do you think were impelled upon you at such a young age that affected you into your entrepreneurial journey as an adult?
Well, I never stood in front of a piano and thought I could play it. I was not, you know, gifted in that way. Or you put a blank canvas in front of me and maybe if I taped a banana to it with duct tape, I could have gotten some money. But other than that, I'm not an artist. But I've always had business acumen. It's just something that I've always had. So, and that's one of the interesting things. I have a chance to do a lot of public speaking and podcasts like this. And sometimes it's interesting to shock people. It's interesting to not be the rah-rah guy. And so one of the things I do talk about is, how dare you think you can be an entrepreneur? You think you can do what I do? Do you realize how hard it is what I do? Do you realize what it takes to do what I do? I can't play the piano. I can't fly an airplane. I can't paint. I really am not good at technology. And each one of those attributes are not only learned, but there's an inherent personality trait behind them. And I think I've always had that personality trait of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. You know, some people say you're a born entrepreneur or you're a trained entrepreneur. You know, you're either a born musician or you're a trained musician. You know, and the fact that it's come naturally to you at such a young age. Now, tell me a little bit about that ski company. What was the impetus that actually got you started in that?
Well, I think at that age, you know, you take your background. My parents both passed away, but I had two amazing, amazing parents. They've raised six kids. We all are still great friends. We get together. We saw each other for last Eagles game. We're all getting together for this weekend for this Eagles game. I'm the youngest of six by far. But I did see my parents struggle, and I saw some of the things that they look forward to. They look forward to renting one Winnebago one time to go across the country. Well, I kind of thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to buy a motorhome? They wanted to go on a cruise, and thank God they did get to go on that cruise. Well, I've been on like 10 of them, and it had nothing to do with them not working hard. As a matter of fact, honestly, I think my parents probably worked as far as working hard. They worked harder than I ever have, but I just didn't want to put myself in that position. I was actually, it was like 30 years ago now, so I was 28, 29 years old at the time. But it just stumbled upon me one day. It's like, oh, my parents were so cool because we used to have pancakes for dinner. And then I realized, well, wait a second. I think we had pancakes for dinner typically on like towards the end of the month. Well, wait a second. I think we had pancakes for dinner because that's what we had in the home. And it has nothing to do with them as people, wonderful parents, wonderful grandparents, wonderful friends, wonderful neighbors. Very funny, the perfect people. But there was that one missing element that I saw being the youngest of six. I often say I'm an only child with five siblings because I really grew up in a home by myself. And I saw things that, you know, as they were getting older and worrying about retirement, that I think that's part of the motivation that propelled me.
Yeah, I can totally see that, you know. Well, so you go from a young child, running a business to, you know, selling on NASDAQ and building such a huge, successful company. When you look back at it today, what do you think was the three major drivers that took you from being this young child entrepreneur to the level that you were there?
Well, I think we talked about this right before coming on. You were going to hit me with questions. You didn't hit me in advance. So if the answers sound good, then it's just based, because the first things that popped in my mind was desire, enjoyment, and commitment. You know, to be an entrepreneur, you have to be committed to it. You can't be, you know, you just can't be a little bit pregnant. You have to be all in. And I think the enjoyment is so fun. And sometimes it was also the enjoyment of getting myself into the natural things that you get yourself into as an entrepreneur and get out of it. Going home 36 hours before a $92,000 payroll, just to pick a number, but I remember this one time, it probably wasn't that far off, having $14,000 in the bank. Well, this is going to be interesting. And it's the faith and confidence that it will work out, plus game planning behind it. It's the challenge that I love. It's the freedom. It's the ability to create. It's the ability to learn from mistakes. That's what I really love. I mean, I love what I do. People, you know, I'm getting up there. I'm 59 years old. And people are like, well, you think about retiring. It's like, hell no, I'm just getting started. I'm so excited what the next 20 years are going to bring, especially with artificial intelligence. And I'm also just really getting good. I mean, the things that I know now, and I even say to my team members all the time, well, 20 years ago, I might have replied to this differently, or I might have thought about this differently. So stumbled upon recently and just thinking in the shower, going to sleep, the power of patience. Sometimes letting things play out. You know, if you have somebody that, you know, you kind of think they're making a mistake, well, if you're proven right, that's okay, because we can learn from that. But oftentimes the cool thing about patience is you're proven wrong too. And you would have blocked that development. So I think it's, again, getting back to what we started in the beginning, is just being a lifelong entrepreneur and absolutely loving it. I do think people train to be entrepreneurs. I really do. But I think the best entrepreneurs, no matter whether you were born that way, I mean, it's the same thing. If you are a great violinist, but you don't have a symphony around you, it really limits your potential. So a great entrepreneur, whether you're born that way or you develop into it, it's about the people you surround yourself with and many other attributes that can absolutely be learned or learned from.
So let's talk about those learnings, because as you say, whether you're a natural born or it's something you can learn, there'll be people that will be listening here on this podcast who they've got the best product, they've got the best service, they've got the best SaaS out there, but they are predominantly one of their challenges, one of the things which is holding them back is that they're more technically led. You know, it's more like the field of dreams. If I build it good, they will come. But in reality, what's happening is they are struggling. Some of them are struggling to pay payroll, you know, because they're not really business orientated. You know, they don't necessarily have the best business training because all their focus has been gone on into the tech. If there was three things, Ed, that you could impart with people to help them in their entrepreneurial journey, I said, they've got the good tech, they've got the good product, they've got the good service, but they're almost becoming the world's best secret because they're so busy doing what they're doing. They're just not getting themselves out there and standing out. What three things would you say to them that they should start doing if they're not doing already?
Well, this is interesting because if you had asked this question over the past 20 years, you probably get 20 different answers depending upon what's happening today. And I, for full disclosure, that's a very logical question that I'm very confident I've been asked in the past. but I don't think I've ever answered this one this way. Number one, be proficient at AI. AI is changing the game for what you need to know. And you have the ability to even ask AI the questions. I mean, my business partner, I don't know if you thought of it or read about it, but I didn't think about it. He said, when you ask AI, don't just ask AI the question. Ask AI the question from the perspective of who you are. I'm a new startup. My sales are coming in. My customer service seems happy, but I don't know why my profitability isn't there. Give me some ideas of what I can do. See, I would have never said that even a year and a half ago. So I will throw that as a fourth one giveaway. But I also feel that artificial intelligence is helping the full circle of business acumen, customer service. Now, business acumen, common sense, listening, really coming back to the forefront, because for 25, 30 years, it was revenge of the nerds. And it's changing. I have a fear that the business world is changing so fast that most people aren't keeping up. And when I say most people, I mean college students, because I teach at Montclair State University, absolutely college professors, and general business people, that you have this unbelievable tool that's going to help other people compete and dominate. So to answer your question, without bouncing all over the place, really considering the business acumen, having the right people on the bus, and then make sure they're in the right seat, having good financial controls. And so 2 years ago, a year ago, somebody could say, yeah, but I really don't understand accounting. You don't have that excuse anymore. I run a company CEO. I need to learn about accounting. What are the things I need to ask how do I hire a bookkeeper? What are the things I need to ask my bookkeeper to do? Write a job description for the bookkeeper. What are things that are missing from this job description? What are the priorities? What are the areas that would get me in trouble? How do I manage cash flow? What questions should I ask of my accountant? See, the thing about it today is it's not the answers, it's the questions. And the questions come from that experience and wisdom. But you can say, what questions should I be asking? And that's something that I've discovered, that a lot of people don't realize the power of AI to do that. So, if you ask for three, I could give you 10. Right people, customer centric, adaptability and be willing to change, financial management, scalable, and processes. There's so much to take. If you have a car and you got three great tires and one lousy tire, you got a bad car. So just like you're saying, Gary, you could be great at tech, but if you don't have all those things going that make the vehicle of the business move, you're not going to achieve. I think one of the things you're really focusing on here at Orbicle, though, is the definition of what is an expense and what is expensive and what is cheap. I literally walked out of a meeting today where, and these are fake numbers, but not really. If you have somebody that takes, you're paying them $50 an hour, but they take 3 hours to accomplish something tremendously well that you can almost just rubber stamp it and pass it on, that's $150. Have somebody at $25 an hour who is 50% less expensive, but they take 8 hours to do it. Now you've lost that time. It's actually more money for that product, and it's probably not going to be nearly as good. So we're not focused. I think right now I talked about four, if you include AI, then I gave you a little laundry list. If I had to pick the one that we're focused on right now is value. What value? It doesn't matter the cost. It matters the deliverable and the value behind it.
Well, I'm going to totally agree with you there, because that is something which I really hold dear in our focus in our business and for our clients as well, is delivering value. And how do people see value? Because it is a perceived value, especially if they haven't got it before. It is their desired outcome. So, what we're seeing more and more success in with companies today are those that are focusing on the outcomes for their clients as opposed to the processes of what they actually do, the deliverables. The deliverables, if you focus on that, and perhaps you have some insights on this, and it's not their fault. This is how they've always done it before. If my competitor does it, then therefore I should do it. It's like monkey does, monkey do. But if you are just explaining the deliverables and doing the deliverables and quoting by deliverables, then you become a commodity, because they go, hey, This guy can do it cheaper for you. He says he can do the same stuff as you, but he's going to do it cheaper. And so and so. And everyone's got a shorter pencil. Everybody, one of my mentors many years ago said, if you compete on price, someone's always got a shorter pencil, can always go lower and lower and lower. So what is the answer? Well, the answer to that, and where we've seen success with our clients and other people that we speak to, is deliver the outcome. Because people don't suddenly wake up and go, oh, let me find a person, let me find a company that can do this, this, and this. They wake up and go, I need this being done. This is the problem I need solving. This is the result I need. This is the outcome that I need. So if one is looking to, what can we actually do? And this is what I'm saying to those who are listening here, is what is it that you do? What is it your product or your service does? What is it the problem that you solve for people? People will only generally do something out of the need of one of three things. Either makes more money, especially in B2B, make more money, save more money, or keep me out of jail, compliance. All right. So what is the problem that you're solving for people as opposed to the next bright, shiny thing? And so what you're saying there is absolutely spot on there, Ed. So that being said, let's talk about failing and failing fast. All right. I'm a great believer in lessons. And, you know, we can't know everything all the time. And it doesn't matter how many times we learn something in business, action speaks louder than words all the time. You know, there's no point having knowledge unless you take the action. And when you take action, riding a bike for the first time, you're going to fall off it. In business, as you can detect, it's exactly the same. What lessons can you share with us that you've had to go through, which you've gone, do you know what? I'm glad I had that lesson.
Oh, everyone, literally everyone. I'm I believe this to be true. It's a very general statement, but I'm first generation young entrepreneur. I mean, go back to 1978, 79, 80, and you'd have to go, well, now you can still use the internet, but, you know, good old microfiche or whatever, microfilm when I was in college. You're not going to find things in business magazines or business publications listing the 40 entrepreneurs under 40 or the top 30 under 30. Young entrepreneurship came about. One of the things with young entrepreneurship is you've got different cultures. And for a long time, it's not as much anymore, but for a long time, when I say long time, I'm talking from 2000 to 2010, there was a huge cultural difference between doing work on the West Coast and East Coast. It was like the rival, you know, rappers, you know, you had the West Coast rappers and the East Coast rappers. And one of the things that I found out about making mistakes or learning, you know, learning from lessons is, you know, I'd be at venture capital meetings or business meetings, and you talk about, you know, oh, this business failed or this business didn't get their funding. It's like, oh man, that's a shame. They're such a failure. We're on the West Coast, the attitude, wow, that's great. What did you learn? You got that behind you. That was expected. Now let's move forward and build. That's kind of merged together where people understand that mindset today. But learning lessons is critical. You learn them fast. You minimize the zeros that are affecting, you know, let's make a mistake at 1,000 versus 10,000 or 10,000 versus 100,000. But like I used to ski years ago and I raced recreationally. It was fun, raced in the Pocono Mountains. But I realized when I was practicing, if I wasn't falling, I wasn't learning. And I kind of took that mindset to business. As far as specific errors that I've made in the past, they're the same things we talked about earlier. Not having great financial controls in place. I had a bookkeeper steal $50,000 from me one time. You would think, how can you do that? Well, I did it. Leaving what I believe to be true is true. I'm never right. The market is always right. Now, we can be a bit better or worse and affect it, but the market will always dictate. And so I've really gotten away from, there's two ways to look at that. Gotten away from, I believe it to be true, therefore it is true, when it's an objective thing, but I believe it to be true when I know it's true in an objective thing. And that's where my wisdom and experience comes in. Another lesson I've learned, listen to your team. My attitude today is, if I want to be a brilliant, and this is great advice for any entrepreneur at any level, surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, because then you prove you're smarter than them. And what I mean by that is, you think of a pie chart, a pizza pie, a Brooklyn pie, whatever. Well, you've got your director of HR, you've got your chief technical officer, you've got your chief financial officer, you have your chief operating officer, you have any of the, let's say you have eight key core people. Well, I cannot have my chief technical officer, I can't be smarter than my chief technical officer than that. I can't know more about HR than that HR. I can't know more about finance and accounting than my CFO. What makes me brilliant is pulling those people together, putting it in a culture that we can be successful. And then I've got another lesson that I've learned is the 80-10-10 rule. So, Gary, if you're my CFO and you say, we're going to do this, let's say over a course of a year, there's 100 decisions, but let's say just 10 of them that we're not aligned on. 8 of those 10, we're going to go you, because you are the responsible leader. You are the expert. And quite frankly, you now have not backed yourself in a corner, but committed to making that be successful. One of those 10 times, I have the right as a CEO to say no. And I will be fully explained and give the whatever it may be. But here's one of the things I learned when we went public. One of those 10 times as CEO, I don't have to tell you. That is my responsibility. The answer is no. And here's why. And I'll give you a real life example of that lesson learned. We were in the process of acquiring a company. After we rolled up, there was 4 of us that were public, 5 total, 4 my company and 4 others. And it was the direct marketing industry. So, you know, you call the 800 number. We had representatives answering the phone 24 hours. Plus, we did direct mail and we did other things. Back in the days when there was New Jersey Bell and Bell Atlantic and Bell South and Pac Bell and things like that, there was a contract with Bell South. Now, we always wanted that contract. It was a great contract and it came up for proposal. And I said to the team, no, we can't. I don't want to bid on that. It's not within our scope. We don't want to do it. And they're like, oh, wait a second. We know we can beat it. Well, what they didn't know is we were in a quiet period because we were buying the company that we wanted to beat. So the value of that company is they had the Bell South contract and we would have going to work our butts off to try and take it away from them. But we were in a quiet period and I couldn't tell the team the reason why. And I realized at certain points you've earned the sleepless nights and draining of the bank accounts earn the right sometimes to not have to explain yourself. But that greatly offset by the fact that 80% of the time, if you and I are somewhat in a disagreement, I've learned, give you the ball, give you the responsibility and have you make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've earned the right to be on that team. Otherwise, you wouldn't have put them there in the first place. And, you know, Richard Branson has always said, my ability to be successful is to surround myself with people far smarter than me in all their different ways of doing. And if he was trying to do it himself, he'll never get his plane off the ground. You know, he'll never have got his spaceship. He'll never got to where he was doing. So, yes, those who follow and model that thing, if you've got a great team, let the team do their work. But as you quite rightly said, you reserve the right as the founder, as the CEO, to say, hey, we're just going to put a pause on this one. We'll revisit at a later stage from that. As we draw in, I've got one last question for you, Ed. I mean, the time goes so quickly when we're together. So I've got this one question. You've had a tremendous amount of experience in different aspects, different niches, different industries. If you could look back at your younger self, and it doesn't matter if you're a teenager or the 20s or 30s, it doesn't make any difference. If you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Bitcoin. Or in 2000, put everything you owned. And it's funny because I sat there January 1st, 2000. I was like, well, what am I going to do now? Well, I could take this money and just stick it in these companies like Amazon and Apple and hope for the best, or I can start a business.
Yeah.
I've done the math, but that would have yielded. That's an interesting thing. But that's
it. But from an entrepreneurial point of view, if people were listening here and going, sure, do you know what? What is the one piece of nugget I can take away? What would that be?
I'd like to tell you nothing. Because at the time, I was doing the best I could. Now, I could give myself advice if I could magically go back into a time machine. But the thing about it is, I don't know that I would listen, because I would be a 30-year-old man listening to a 59, whatever, I keep forgetting, a 59-year-old man. And I don't know at 30 I would have listened. I also think the times are so different. If I had to say anything, though, to help you answer to your question in a manner that's valuable to the audience, I would say slow down. Listen, be patient, wait 24 hours before you respond. But that's also a level of maturity that that does come over time. I think a lot of people would answer your question. I'm sure others maybe on this podcast have given very eloquent, good answers. But are they truthful answers in your real ability to do that? If I was going to give a truthful answer, it would be, and anybody could, people, everybody could do this today. Slow down. Everything that seems like it's a super unbelievable, horrible business situation today, well, you had them last July, you've forgotten about them, and you'll forget about this too will pass. I'm working on a book right now, and I had a pretty serious situation. And one of the best pieces of advice I had says, it doesn't matter how bad it is today, this too will pass. So I think that would be the advice.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice to end on there, because, you know, it's like driving fast, and we're always, as entrepreneurs, we always feel like we're trying to go at 100 miles an hour, but sometimes we just got to drive safely. If you, the difference between 75 miles an hour and 100 miles an hour, you know, is negligible to getting to the end, but you're slowing down enough to be safe, to see what the surroundings are, and that you'll end up there.
Yeah, and appreciate, and it sounds like very esoteric, but appreciate life. And what I mean by that, though, is, you know, I'm a big fan of Linkin Park. Maybe some of the people know, maybe they don't, whatever. If I could have traded with Chester Bennington, the lead singer, I'd take his life, and we traded. Oh my God. You know, like, I mean, that's excluding the kids and the family and stuff. But other than that, I would have done it. He's dead. You know, Anthony Bourdain, he's got a great life. He's dead. Bo Biden, somebody that I had interactions with down in Delaware and things like that. And he was on his way to be president. He's dead. I had bought the stock in Apple and Amazon, which would today be worth over $200 million, far more than that. I would have bought a Ferrari. I might have driven too fast, I'd be dead. So, yeah. You know, enjoy what you have today, make the best of it, and know that this too will pass.
Well, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. Well, Edward, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute honor to have you. If people want to get hold of you, have a chat with you, what's the best place to get hold of you?
Well, orpical.com, O-R-P-I-C-A-L. And if you Google it, O-R-P-I-C-A-L, you'll learn what that word even means. The word means something specifically. My direct email is easy, just ed@orpical.com.
Brilliant. Well, I'll make sure those links are there as well, so they can link directly to you. So once again,
LinkedIn, I'm heavy on LinkedIn.
I'll make sure the LinkedIn link is there as well. So thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today. It's been an honor.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, too, for joining us on this episode. And as always, if you loved something or you heard something today, please make sure you like it and comment it. But more importantly, make sure you share. This channel is about growing together so we can grow our companies and grow our careers. So make sure if you learned something today, make sure that you share it with somebody you feel could get used to it. So until the next episode, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Ed, for joining your time. And we shall see you all soon. Bye-bye.